Good evening and welcome, everyone. This is RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Along with our usual co-host and senior sports writer, Keith Groller, I'm Chris Michael. We have a great show lined up for you with some very special guests and some very important topics on the program tonight. So let's go right to our first guest leading off the program, joining us on the phone line from MLB.com and Major League Baseball Pipeline, doing a great job in the weeks leading up to the Major League Baseball draft, getting you ready for the draft, and of course a busy 72 hours now recapping and providing analysis of Major League Baseball draft and doing a great job at MLB.com. Mr. Jim Callis joins us on the phone line. Jim, welcome once again to Sports Talk.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Clint. Thanks for having me back.
Well, we appreciate all the work you've been doing. Again, you've been doing a great job with all the previews and then with the recaps the last couple days. And I know it's a very busy time of year. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us. First of all, I want to give you credit because you had projected Casey Mize as the number one pick in this year's draft, and you nailed that right away. What was it about Casey that stood out in your mind? And also, what was it that the Tigers really liked to make him their number one guy overall?
Yeah, you know, this wasn't necessarily like a Steven Strasburg or a Bryce Harper case where, you know, Casey Mize was just head and shoulders above everybody else, but he was the front runner to go number one pretty much all spring. And, you know, you just don't see a college pitcher or certainly a high school pitcher with this combination of stuff and polish. It's rare. I mean, Mize is a guy who, you know, has probably the most unhittable pitch in the draft. He's got a splitter changeup that he commands very well. You know, it's not just, you know, guys chasing out of the strike zone. He's got 92-97 mile an hour fastball with life, and he commands that really well too. And he's got a slider that improved this year. It's a plus slider, and he can turn it into a cutter, and he can morph it into a curve. And I think he led NCAA Division I with some ridiculous strikeout to walk ratio, about 12, a little over 12 last year, and actually boosted that number this year. So, I mean, it's just when you see that kind of stuff and ability to command that many quality pitches, it's rare. And I think it was a fairly easy decision for the Tigers based on that.
Jim, I know one of the things I always ask you about is the divide between college athletes and high school athletes, and it seems to kind of vary from year to year as far as who gets the top pick and which area draws the most interest in the upper rounds. And this year it certainly looked like the college athletes got the most attention early, top five picks all from college, seven of the top 10. Was there anything particular or unique about this year's college class that they seem to draw a little bit more of the attention than in previous years?
No, not really. I mean, to be honest with you, I do think maybe some of the college guys who were expected to go at the very top, you maybe didn't have quite the year people hope, but it's really a product of, I think, a lot of teams picking at the top of the draft are very college-oriented when it comes to the draft. They prefer players who have put up, you know, track records of statistical performance at the college level. I don't necessarily feel that the college crop was that much stronger than the high school crop this year, and in the long term, they may be pretty even. I think that just reflects that there were a number of clubs at the top of the draft that like to go in that direction. You know, it's interesting because the first team to pick a high school player, the Mets, I think they really kind of wanted to go for a college player,
yeah.
But I think they probably would have taken any of the five guys who went ahead of them had they gotten to six, and they didn't. And they wound up with a very good high school hitter in Jared Kelnick.
Jim, can you tell me about the young man from Wichita State who went to the Phillies, third baseman? Obviously, Franco has been a disappointment to this point. How far away is he from maybe getting to Philadelphia?
Yeah, you know, and Alec Bohm is one of those, you know, statistical performers. You know, he's got more walks and strikeouts, which is kind of like the key for a lot of those clubs. And, you know, for the Phillies, you know, I mean, picking number three was a key pick, not just because they're picking third overall, but that was the only pick they had in the first three rounds because they'd given up their second and third round picks. But he should move pretty quick. You know, I think if you're breaking down all players in this draft and you're looking at the college position players, he probably has the best chance to hit for a combination of average and power than any of them. So I do like that about him. I think he'll move pretty quick. He controls the strike zone pretty well. You know, he's got pure hitting ability, and he's got raw power as well. You know, and in the long run, I think he winds up at first base. I just don't think he's got the quickness and agility to stay at third in the long run. I do think the bat profile is at first base, so I think he's still, you know, I don't think there's, you know, it's not like it's a huge disappointment if he winds up at first, but I would be a little surprised. I mean, he may break into the big leagues at third base, but I think long term, he's going to want to be in a first baseman for Philadelphia.
When we look at the NFL, it looks like the Patriots always seem to know what they're doing. How about in Major League Baseball? Is there anybody that always seems to know what they're doing, especially in regard to their scouting system?
You know, I'm going to say no, because I think there's a lot more projection involved in Major League Baseball, and I think if you look at the Patriots' kind of sorry history of defensive backs in the draft, I'm not sure that they do that great either in the NFL. But I just think, you know, even your most advanced players, like you mentioned Alec Baum, who probably is going to be big league ready within 2 years, he's still 2 years away from the big leagues, and there's so much projection involved with these guys that I say this all the time. You know, there's so much goes into this, and then when you just talk about the injury attrition that hits pitchers, it doesn't seem like we have any kind of clue. You know, we look for athletic, you know, clean deliveries, and those guys seem to get hurt just like everybody else. I don't think, you know, whoever you think or I think is the best scout or the best team at figuring these types of things out, there's nobody who has a track record of hitting on the draft year after year after year. It's just too difficult. I mean, obviously there's a lot of time and money that goes into this, but nobody has figured out like a formula or approach that's going to, you know, lend you, you know, to good drafts year after year after year. I will say, if you look at David Chad, who's with the Tigers, I mean, he's got a pretty good track record. You know, Jason McLeod, who oversees scouting for the Cubs, he's a pretty good track record. You know, I'm probably forgetting a couple guys off the top of my head. But if you look at their drafts, I mean, they have years where they don't get much at all. It's a very, very difficult process to, you know, it's more, I think, art than science, and nobody has mastered it on a consistent basis.
Jim, I think another interesting name is the Yankees, Siegler. Not only a great talent, but potential to be the first ambidextrous pitcher and catcher. And we've seen sometimes...
Well, he's not going to pitch. He's not going to pitch. He's done pitching, but you're right. I mean, I don't know what the list is of guys who switch hit and switch pitch at the same time. And he's one of them, but he's going to be a full-time catcher. He's done pitch. I mean, the switch pitching is interesting, mm-hmm. and he was effective in high school, but he's kind of an upper 80s guy. I mean, we're not talking mm-hmm. about, like, a first-round, you know, he's not Shohei Ohtani, you know, doing both with both arms. But he is what he is for the Yankees is he's a very athletic catcher who probably could profile as an everyday guy at second base if you wanted to do that as well. Extremely athletic. You know, his arm, he's agile. He's got a quick transfer that helps his arm play up. You know, you feel pretty good about his ability to receive and frame pitches. You know, offensively, you know, he does hit from both sides. It's kind of a line drive approach. I think the question on him is how much power he's going to give you. But, I mean, this might be a guy, you know, if he reaches his ceiling, and look, he's a long way from that. I mean, you're looking at a guy who maybe hits, you know, 280 with 12, 15 home runs and gives you really good defense behind the plate. But I don't think you'll ever see him take the mound, you know, once he turns pro. Yeah.
I think one of the big debates a lot of high school coaches have to deal with is you have some coaches that say, you know, if you want to go to the professional level, you have to concentrate on one sport. You have to go to camps. You have to train in the off season. There's other coaches out there that feel that, you know what, play as many sports as you want. And I thought it was interesting. You have Kyler Murray who says, you know what, you can draft me to Major League Baseball team. You can draft me if you want, but I'm going to be playing football this fall regardless. And the A's took a chance on him. What do you think of that story? And is there a trend one way among scouts and professional teams? Do they like to have athletes playing multiple sports, or do they like to have them just focus on baseball in this case?
I think in general, I mean – when you sign the guy, you want him focusing on baseball. But I think in general, most scouts I talk to like guys who play multiple sports because I think it helps develop you as an overall athlete. I think it helps develop different parts of your body, you know, in terms of muscles and being able to do things. I think from a pitching standpoint, if you're in a warm weather area or even if you want to travel and do some showcase stuff, I mean, you can pitch pretty much year-round, and I don't think anybody thinks that's really good for your arm. So I think in general, you want guys to play a variety of sports. And, you know, with Kyler Murray, the A's did not draft him without knowing what they were getting into. I mean, you know, when you draft a guy, most of these guys in the draft have agreed to financial parameters before they get picked, or they're not going to get picked because teams want to know how they're going to fit into their bonus pools and how much money they're going to have to spend elsewhere. And then with Kyler, What's really interesting about him, and I thought it was very cool to see him pick ninth overall by the A's. And again, I mean, they knew what they were getting into, and they knew what he was going to do when they picked him. But, I mean, Kyler Murray's a guy who 3 years ago, coming out of high school, would have been a first-round pick and would have gotten $3 million or more, you know, had he committed to baseball. And he actually took himself out of the draft because he wanted to play football. And he went to Texas A&M and started a little bit as a quarterback, as a freshman, and he transferred and sat out a year, and then he played behind Baker Mayfield last year and will probably take over for the Sooners in the fall. You know, prolific offense. He got to play a little bit last year, and actually they kind of had some plays where he got to run and catch some passes too. But, you know, from a baseball standpoint, this is a guy with game-changing speed, and a lot of times these guys who divide their time between two sports at their position players, they lose too many at-bats because they're not focusing on baseball, and then it just kind of kills their careers baseball-wise. And in his case, he didn't play his first year when he was at A&M. He played a little bit last year at Oklahoma, and he looked very rusty and not effective. But this year he came back, and still, despite being pretty rusty, you know, he came back. He was dramatically improved at the plate. You know, there's still ways to go, but you feel really good about what he could do when he focuses on baseball eventually. And, you know, it was interesting. I was talking to a lot of scouts this spring, and they loved him. And everybody said, look, this guy's got a first-round talent, but he's waited 3 years to play football, and now he's going to take over one of the most prolific and fun offenses in college football. Like, you're not going to be able to make him give it up. And what he did, and I thought this was kind of a good compromise, you know, he's a smaller guy. He's like 5'10", so he's not really an NFL quarterback size. I mean, maybe he'd have a career as a slot receiver or something. But, like, what he told teams as the draft approach was, look, I'm not giving up football this fall, but if you draft me and you pay me, and then, you know, they worked out parameters, I'll give up football after the fall. And you can be, you know, the A's, what they can do too is there's two-sport rule in baseball where they can spread his bonus over 5 years. So, like, he'll probably sign for somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million, which is what the slot value is at nine, and he'll probably get, you know, $500,000 or maybe $1 million up front. And the rest of it will be contingent on him sticking with the A's. But, so I think what you're going to see with Kyler Murray is he'll go back to Oklahoma in the fall, and, you know, he'll probably be there for most of the summer too, preparing to be quarterback, and he'll play for the Sooners, and then when his football season's done, he's told the A's he'll be full-time baseball. So I thought that was a creative approach that kind of lets him get that season of college football in that he always wanted, but he knows he's got a better, much better pro future in baseball, and that's what he'll be doing full-time in 2019.
Our special guest is Jim Callis, a senior sports writer for MLB.com and MajorLeaguePipeline.com as well. One other team I wanted to ask you about was the Nationals. Early on, they picked two pitchers right at the top of their list, one out of high school, one out of college. One of them has some injury concerns, which is not unusual for Washington fans. What are your thoughts on some of the Nationals' picks and trying to restock their pitching up top?
Yeah, both their first two picks had injury issues this spring and would have gone higher had they not. But they both came back at the end of the year, too. You know, Mason Denenberg, who they got with the 27th overall pick, you know, high school righties usually go a little bit lower than they should, and he came down with biceps tendonitis. But had he not come down with biceps tendonitis, I mean, he was pushing his way into the top, you know, 10 or 12 picks. You know, he was at the top of the high school pitching list, you know, up there with that top-tier high school pitchers. I mean, this is a guy who's been up to 97 miles an hour at times. He sits around 94 with life down the zone. He's got a power breaking ball. He's got feel for changeup. He's really athletic because he was a pretty interesting catcher as well. You know, better as a pitcher, but guys liked him as a catcher too. And, you know, had he gone to Florida, which he probably, again, I mean, the Nationals know it's going to take to sign him, so he's not going to wind up in Florida. But had he gone there, he was going to try to maybe kick and punt for the Gators football team as well. So this guy's super athletic, had biceps tendonitis, and you're right. I mean, this is, you know, the Nationals are a team that's invested in Lucas Giolito and Eric Fetty and Jesus Luzardo, who they traded, who's now one of the best pitching prospects in the minors. And they've had success doing this, like kind of buying low on guys who had some injury issues. And, you know, Tim Cade had some issues as well this spring and missed some time, but he has one of the very best curveballs in the entire draft. You know, he's a smaller guy. You know, I think there's some durability issues because it's forearm tightness this year. But, like, I think he's got a high floor because I think that curveball alone makes him a lefty reliever in the big leagues. And we'll see. You know, I mean, he's 90-93, you know, with the fastball. And you know, I'm sure they'll probably try to give him a chance to start. But to me, you know, the upside is if he, you know, at worst, I think you're getting a pretty good lefty specialist. And we'll see if he can be more than that.
Jim, pretty soon the baseball is going to have the stage a little bit to itself, a little bit of a window there, hockey ending, basketball ending, and then, of course, we have a couple weeks where baseball's front and center. What are the storylines that you are most interested in as we, you know, steamroll here toward the midpoint of the season, the All-Star break, and so forth?
Yeah, I guess we had the World Cup main truth a little bit.
America, a lot of people around here don't care. So.
Well, I'm not the biggest, but I mean, I think a lot of people are soccer fans. I'm not a huge soccer fan, but no, I mean, I think that one of the interesting storylines is, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees. And I know that gets overdone, but I mean, we're talking about two teams that are on pace to both win over 100 games, and it's so important to avoid that one-game wild card playoff. I think you may see, even though both teams are, it's hard to imagine either of them would miss the playoffs right now, may continue to, bolster themselves as the season goes on. So I think that's one storyline that that I'm interested in seeing. I think another storyline is, Mike Trout is. You know, he just seems like the guy gets better every year, which is kind of insane. But, like, I mean, he's on pace to have the best season of his career, which is really saying something, and maybe one of the best seasons of all time. And you look at that team, and, maybe we take him for granted a little bit, but, like, he's not even the most interesting guy because, Shohei Ohtani is basically having the best two-way season at the major league level since Babe Ruth in 1918 and 1919. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, I think the Shohei Ohtani story, continues to be interesting. And then I think, I know I'm a prospect hound, but for me, we're seeing all these, just unbelievably great young players like Ronald Acuna in Atlanta, and also, Ozzie Albies in Atlanta is having an unbelievable year, too. And Juan Soto, who's 19 years old and playing a major role in Washington. And Gleyber Torres, who, is having a really strong rookie season for the Yankees. So I think, watching to see, can these rookies keep doing what they're doing? They're off to these tremendous starts. That's something that's on my mind as well.
Jim, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about any names that stuck out later on in the draft or unique storylines. And one of them, Connor Higgins, guy who played baseball just down the road from our studio, very good high school pitcher. We broadcast some of his games in high school. He's having success at college now. He got drafted in the 30th round. So any thoughts you have on Connor Higgins, Parkland High School grad, and any other unique storylines later on in the draft this time around?
Yeah, with Connor, he didn't have a great year at Arizona State this year, but he's still a big 6'5" left-hander who has creates kind of unusual angle with that size. When he's on, he can hit 94 with some good cutting life on his fastball, and it'll be interesting to see how he does. I do think obviously if you're going 30th round, you're not a top prospect, but I do think as a lefty, who can show you pretty good fastball times and an interesting slider, he's got a chance. He won the 30th round. He's not a top prospect, but they're kind of curious to see what he does. I don't know if there's any unbelievable story that jumps to mind to me on the second day. I could kind of look at random rounds, and there's always an interesting guy. Just picking the 11th round, which is the first one, day three. I think the Red Sox got a pretty interesting kid out of Ohio named Nick Northcutt, who's one of the better hitters. But, I don't know if there was an unbelievable story that just jumps to mind. The Astros kind of went relative crazy in the 30s. They took Carlos Correa's brother and Alex Bregman's brother, and the grandson of Jose Cruz, and the son of Jose Cruz Jr. So, you always have those kind of relatives going late. But, it'll be interesting to see how these guys develop going forward.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thanks again for your time today, and great job again previewing the draft and recapping the last 72 hours. I know I've been very busy for you. So, thanks so much for your time. I hope you can get to rest a little bit this weekend.
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit more relaxed than it has been for the last few weeks. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
All right, we really appreciate your time. And, again, thanks for joining us and for your great coverage.
Yeah, great talking to you guys. Thank you.
Right. Jim Callis, senior writer, does a great job with MLB.com and Major League Baseball Pipeline. Make sure you check out his work and all of his videos and his analysis of this year's Major League Baseball draft. All right, we're going to continue in just a moment, but as we head to break, Phillies' Cole Irvin is one of a couple of young pitchers in the upper levels of the Philly system that has been having an extraordinarily great first 2 months of the season. We caught up with Cole to ask him about his success and working with a very experienced group of receivers.
I guess I've been lucky enough to find success at each level, I've played with a lot of the guys that I've moved up with, so that kind of gives you a sense of comfort. And Rickles being majority of my catcher in Double A and Triple A, he's really kind of kept me in check and kept me calm when things were racing and stuff. And it's really just a combined effort. When I got called up to Double A, we were playing the Nationals, and that's the team he came from. So I told him I wasn't shaking the entire game, and I think I went 6 or 7 innings at my first Double A appearance. And I just really trust him, and he's a smart guy. He knows how to call a good game, and so does Logan and Matt McBride. I mean, working with those two guys, I might not work with McBride in my first Triple A start, and had success. I think it's just been an overall team effort. I mean, I think we've done a really good job of just playing good defense, have connected on offense, and our catchers are calling great games. I mean, it's not just me that's finding success. It's a lot of the team that's finding success. We're all working together, and it's fun to win here. We like to win at home. We have a good laser show for post game victories, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to win here.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call, along with Keith Groller. I'm Chris Michael. Glad you could be with us. For our next segment, we're going to bring in the president of Patriots Park and a great guy, Bobby Cuck. Bobby, I know you've been busy. 4 games this afternoon at Pates Park, state playoff games you've been hosting, and it's been a great season with some interesting weather you've had to put up with. So thanks for joining us, and
well,
what was today
you.
Like so
Chris,
far?
It's nice to be here on your show, along with my good friend Keith.
You saw him earlier today, right?
It's been like 3 hours
since
we saw each other.
Yeah, I saw 3 hours. He was at the park. Yeah, we were quite surprised to get 4 games.
Yeah.
And
that's a coup, really. That's a testament to how great that park is.
That really is a testament. We feel very proud about that. We figured maybe a game or two, and then when they said 4, I was really, really
sure. You usually host an opening round game, but 4, yeah, 4 quarterfinal rounds.
We've done this a couple of years ago.
Last year, though, you got slighted with the – well, not slighted, but they didn't choose to put a game there for the semifinals. Now I'm so curious to see if you get something on Monday.
So am I. Maybe 1 game at the most, but it just—you don't know how it's going to fall. You don't know what the PIAA is going to do. You just—you know.
Well, it depends on matchups, and if you just like in basketball, Chris, if you remember, we got a lot of state playoff games over at Freedom and Liberty because if teams are from the north and they're from the south, where are they going to go? They're going to go to the Lehigh Valley, and that's what we're surmising is going to happen with at least 1 or 2 matchups on Monday in the semifinals. We are excited that we have 2 teams. Going through 2 teams that know Pates Park very well. We could have a 3rd later tonight. The Becca, as we speak, is playing right now. But great that Parkland got through. Great that Nashville got through. I know you treat everybody the same and you treat the visitors with great respect, but it's always good when our local kids do well. Right, Bobby?
Yes. And, as you know, you follow District 11 constantly for many years. Our district does well. We do very well, District 11.
Well, I don't want to rub it into the baseball community, but I think the totals, I don't know, maybe you can come up with this figure. But
last I saw, Northwestern was winning.
Well, they won today.
They did win.
Good.
Okay.
I love the Tigers, and that's great. Yep. But I think the total champions, if you went by state champions, it's like, I don't know, I want to say in the last 30 years, it's like 25 softball to like 1. And Catasauqua always pops the corks on the champagne when the last team, local team, loses because they're very proud of what they did in 1997. Yeah. But one day somebody's going to break through and join the Ruffies. Of course, Whitehall, as you know, made it all the way to the state finals. But right now, softball, in terms of that softball, baseball, if you comparison, softball, we do much better right now.
Yeah, and for years, RCN, we would broadcast the baseball and the softball championships out State College and Williamsport and Shippensburg and so forth. And I would always get the hate mail from the other end of the office here because at the softball, I'd usually have at least 1 Lehigh Valley champion. I'd get to announce the games. And the other announcing crew didn't, I think once or twice we had someone from the Lehigh Valley that got in. But, one other thing I wanted to ask you, I know we want to look ahead. This is the 65th anniversary of Pates Park. We wanted to talk about some upcoming events. But before we do, I think in a divisive time, I think everyone can agree on one thing, and that was this was the worst weather for spring that anyone can remember. And you guys pulled some rabbits out of your hat, in particular the 1 playoff game in which games were washed out up and down the eastern coast of eastern part of Pennsylvania, and Pates Park had a game a couple weeks ago. Was it Northwestern at, or Northern Lehigh was playing
it was,
that game?
It was Palmerton and Northern Lehigh.
Right.
And there was a tornado watch, right, and you know, all this wind and everything, and you guys played a game that night.
Now that you brought all that up, we take pride in that 65 years, but we've always had, let's just say if there's a high school schedule of 30 games, 29 mm-hmm. get rained out, but the one at Pates Park gets played. We will wait. We have a grounds crew. We get it done, and we're the only ones that can do that. So we're really proud of our grounds crew.
Well, I thought there was a secret dome called the Groller Dome that comes out of the ground, so you don't have to worry about
it. Don Hunsiker won't use a tarp. But I don't know who's gonna, we don't have many volunteers anymore, so I don't know who would roll it out.
It was really amazing. That might have been the most amazing thing, Bobby, that I've seen all year. Because that was really, really a bad night. The park, the water was all over the field. But Becky George, to her credit, Becky George, who was the softball chairman of the Colonial League, now going to Emmaus to become the athletic director, she made that call. She said, "We're playing tonight." She walked down in that field. She grabbed a broom or whatever and started sweeping. She made that happen along with your grounds crew. And it was so important to get that one game in because, as you remember, it rained the next day. And then they had a quadruple header there.
Right.
So she doesn't get that one particular game in, the window was such that they could fit barely four games in. A fifth game wasn't going to happen, and you were going to have a problem because it rained again, I think, on the back end. So, look, I always say this, and I've been saying this, Bobby, for 35 years that I'm at the morning call. If they're playing anywhere in the Valley on a given night, they're playing at Pates Park.
And I had talked to Don about this. She was this close
to getting the second game in.
Well, she was this close about canceling.
Well,
she was really kicking it around, but then it was a good
move.
But
she made the call, though.
Oh, she did.
I was in the box. To me, with the possible exception of Lafayette, I'll give Lafayette a plug. Lafayette's got a fantastic football press box. And Liberty High School, I will maintain that for a high school facility, you don't see a press box like Pates Park anywhere else. And so I was there. The meetings were going on, and I'm thinking, there's no way we're going to play tonight. Becky just sent everybody home. She was insistent. She got it in, and it worked out very, very well.
It came out really good. We're really proud of that.
Right. Bobby, you can stick around for another segment, right?
Sure.
All right, we're going to be talking about some big events coming up at Pates Park. Their 65th anniversary, some big celebrations going on coming up on the other side of this break. But right now, it's Keith's favorite part of the show. It's called Groller's Grumblings, where Keith sounds off and talks about anything on his sports mind.
Well, we are coming to the end of another high school season, and once again, I believe this is my completing, believe it or not, I think there's like 36 scholastic seasons that I've covered as a full-time man at the morning call, and people say, well, you know, why do you keep doing it? Why, you know, and it's because of the kids. We've had tremendous teams, tremendous performances across the board this year, and thankfully, we go into the final week, and we could get a fourth team tonight. We'd have to see what Bethlehem Catholic does. But right now, we know that Northwestern baseball and, of course, Nazareth and Parkland softball are going on. People moving around. I mean, we got Brian Gilbert leaving Whitehall football for Palisades. Becky George, as I just referenced, coming from Palisades to Emmaus. We're going to say goodbye to Brian Geisel at Parkland High School, Dennis Romello at Emmaus High School. And these guys, you know, we wish them all well, and we hope that everybody finds their appropriate fit. We just had a bunch of hirings as well in the coaching ranks, a slew of basketball coaches, Ed Wilson coming back, for example, at Parkland High School to coach the girls. But look, the bottom line is, the kids of the Lehigh Valley, as we close the 2017-18 school year, the kids, they do a fantastic job, and I maintain that our area, I know we didn't have the statewide success that we've had in other years, but look it, we have great kids, and if you don't like what's going on in Philadelphia, you don't like what's going on here or there, get tired of the national anthem controversy and so forth, get out and support the Lehigh Valley scholastic sports scene.
All right, very well said. Jeff Geisel, by the way.
What did I say?
I don't know, Bob or Brian or something.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Brian Geist up at, Jeff, we miss you. We miss you already. I've already forgotten your name.
Don't be a stranger. Yeah, we'll see you. Hope to see you around. And we'll have more of tonight's show in just a moment.
I know who they are.
Well,
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Chris Michael, Keith Groller of the Morning Call, and joined this segment by Bobby Cuck, president of Patriots Park. And Bobby, as we alluded to before the break, a lot of big events coming up at Pates Park. It's 65th anniversary. Maybe you can touch on some of the big events coming up this summer.
Well, that's right. We have the coming up the Carpenter Cup on June the 20th at our park. And you're always over that for that, too, also. And then, of course, we have the 18th annual, it's the Lehigh Valley Hall of Fame.
Yes, and I'll, if you don't want mine, I'll mention the five inductees.
No, we have five inductees.
Tom Boyd, near and dear to you, is a longtime umpire. Tom Boyd, umpire, he's going in. Deanna Stinner, from, of course, the daughter of the legendary Ed Stinner from Parkland High School. She's going in.
That's right.
Candace Snyder Danner, who led Northwestern to a state championship way back in 1985. Oh. She's going in. Long overdue, by the way, in my opinion, for Candace. And then we have Ed Lesko, a very talented men's that you probably umpired some of his games.
I'm sure I did.
Very, very good ball player, I understand. I didn't cover too much of the men in his era. And then Rocky Santilli.
The coach of the
Sunners. And, of course, he had Ty Stofflet, Larry Berg, and all those guys, and he took teams to the net. So we have a good collection of five going in. That is, normally we've had that event, Chris, in June. That's going to be July the 11th this year, a little bit later. Because June's crazy. There's a lot going on in June.
And, of course, the Breakheads are coming back.
Oh, they're the Yankees of the women's fast pitch, aren't they?
I have a lineup sheet from the 80s when I used to do their games when they came down here with Lisa Fernandez and Dot Richardson, and you stand there and these girls are really a professional team. So we have to go up there with our Patriots, 23 and under, then they come down here reciprocating.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
nice.
That, we're looking forward to that. They really bring some people into
the Well, they have that name. They're like, they are, and I mean it. They are the Yankees of women's fast pitch. They're just a storied franchise. And a lot of national championships, a lot of world championships, and most of the girls who represented us in the Olympics, the women,
played
I should say, came through the Breakout program.
Are they going to be welcomed back to the Olympics again?
Well, we're coming back to the Olympics, but the problem with the U.S. is that we're too good, and people, you know, the competition hasn't been great. I think in the four times that we had an Olympic team, the women won three gold and had one silver, something like that. So the concern is they're almost like too good. They're trying to foster some of the other countries to make it more competitive.
Joe said today they're national champions from last year again. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And a lot of these events are free, so it's great for people to come out and see some great softball this summer.
That's great. Yeah, they're free. Very good. Then the Alzheimer's benefit. Do you know about that?
I forgot.
No, you don't.
Alzheimer's very, very, very close and near to dear to my mother had it, and of course she just passed away. And Alzheimer's, I can't say enough how it impacts a life, and that's great that you guys.
It's a benefit.
Absolutely.
The old timers are going to play Channel 69 in the softball game. It's a great benefit.
That's a great camaraderie.
They have a nice team. They put a nice team together too. Even the anchor guys gets a couple hits in there. So
you know, Keith is a star softball pitcher. In case you need someone,
I'm available to help you, Bobby.
You were okay.
He told me. So.
You were a husky.
Yes,
right?
I was. Yeah. Yes, I was.
In different days and different times. But like I said, we have a full lineup going on. Then our fall league comes in. And we start that in September, and we go to Brian on Halloween. I used to umpire a few games in that FSA, Fast Pitch Softball Association. Be out there day before Halloween with gloves on, snowing. Wild.
What's the number one attraction? What do you plug more than anything else? We got the great refreshment stand, folks. We got hot dogs, cheeseburgers, french fries, and soft pretzels. Fresh.
Right,
fresh from South Philly. You say it every game.
And I got a big sign from those guys this year. Today I was announcing the first game. I drove over, got 25, came back. They ran out of the first game. They ran out of pretzels. I call in for another 25. I got to get him back there next year.
I knew this would turn into a conversation about food somehow. Go ahead.
It is.
Well, I'm the marketing manager.
Yeah.
They brought a few fellas in. You know about sales. I sold AM radio. If you can sell AM radio, you know what you can sell. Which is not for this show, but it's people brought in to try to help. It's not a thing where they get all this business back. they're helping us, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a tough sell, especially today. Everything's a tough sell. But most of them,
a lot of distractions for kids, too.
Yeah, 75% of those signs are all sold by me, and you know that.
And, Bobby, you know that one of the ongoing... I don't want to forget these guys.
30 seconds.
Okay. The old timers. They're
right.
there, a couple times a week?
Yeah, they have a league. They play.
They're wonderful.
There's two teams.
The red,
they play for fun.
The red and the blue,
they play for blood. Guys, 75 years old playing for blood.
They have a lot of talent on that field, though. They do.
Bobby, thanks so much for joining us. Continued success with you and all the people at Pates Park.
So nice to be on your show.
All right. The great Bobby Cuck, president of Patriots Park. Hopefully they'll have one more high school playoff game for the States coming up. We'll take a break and be back with more of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call in just a moment. Joined by special guest Mary Troper, the executive director for Shootout for Soldiers, a great nonprofit event coming up here. We like to talk about the DC market in particular, but it's also of interest to a lot of our other markets in the RCN area. Mary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you about Shootout for Soldiers and our mission and what we do to help American veterans.
Oh, it's great. It's a great event, first of all. So maybe you could talk about how it started and how you came aboard with it and where the money is raised, where does it go to?
I'd be more than happy to. Shootout for Soldiers was started by a group of high school students in Maryland. In fact, our CEO, Tyler Steinhardt, is one of the founders that started this event. They had watched a 60 Minutes story about veterans coming back to the United States and not having services available and thought they had a senior project. Let's see if we can raise money for the veterans organizations that they mentioned. And the only way they knew how to do it was through lacrosse because that's what they love.
Mm-hmm.
They started playing lacrosse for 24 hours in 2012, raised a little bit of money, and thought this might catch on. And that is how the event started, which is now 6 years old. We've raised over $2.5 million in the 12 locations that we have had the event. And we look forward to this 2018 year expanding to the Washington, D.C. area and having an event in our capital, which is so appropriate for Shootout for Soldiers. The charity partners, and the way Shootout for Soldiers works is we have four national charity partners, and then every local organizer gets to choose two or three local charity partners so that the money that's raised during that 24 hours stays within that general location, which is unique in regards to a lot of other charities that it goes to one location and then is split up. We try to keep all of the money that's raised within that location in that location. So the national charity partners that we work with are Semper Fi, Ranger Lead the Way, the Gary Sinise Foundation, and Team Red, White, and Blue, which all have local facilities within the area that the our events are located. The local charity partner for Washington, D.C. this year is Operation Renewed Hope Foundation and the Yellow Ribbon Fund, both amazing local charities within the Washington, D.C. area that are going to benefit immensely from the Shootout for Soldiers event.
Mary, it seems like this is just the perfect formula for a very successful event. And 6 years, $2.5 million. Has the interest grown each and every year?
Well, as you know, lacrosse is the fastest growing sport, and putting it together with a charity partnership is what has helped grow Shootout for Soldiers every single year. We accept applications for locations, and then they go through interviews to see if it's the right local organizer that has the right community support that can host an event. All of our local organizers are all volunteers. which makes the event even more amazing when you think that a local organizer who works a full-time job takes on the responsibility of putting on a 24-hour charity event to raise money for our veterans. The local organizer in Washington, D.C. is actually an active Navy officer now. So the connection that our local organizers have to the veteran community is one of those unique situations where those people support the event, but we're also giving back to the veterans that have served.
You're absolutely right. Lacrosse is growing by leaps and bounds in terms of fan interest, in terms of participation interest, and I would like to think that the Washington, D.C. area, with some great institutions, college programs, growing high school programs, I'd like to think that that is the perfect spot for an event like yours.
It is definitely the perfect spot. We are so excited about Washington, D.C. this year. And just to give you a little background, teams, we have traditional teams that register to play, youth through masters, any age, any ability. But we also have non-traditional teams because it is a charity event. It's not a competitive event. You're either on the Stars team or Stripes team, and it's a cumulative score of hours, which turns out to usually be pretty close, usually between 5 and 7 points, which makes it a lot of fun. The unique teams and that will register for this type of an event, in Ohio last year we had the first all goalie team. The goalies played every position with goalie sticks. Washington, D.C. is also going to have an all goalie team. We've had family teams where we had three generations on the field. The grandparents and parents, most of them have never picked up a stick before but wanted to play with their kids. We have had a father-daughter game. We have switched sticks game. So what we do in the way of letting the community get involved is it does not have to be a traditional team. We encourage people to come that want to form a team and just go out and play for an hour and have a good time. Each team is in charge of fundraising to $750, and that money goes back to our veterans' charities. And they can actually play for someone maybe that was in their family. We'll have kids that have said, my grandfather was in the Navy, I'm going to play for him. So it's a way for the community to connect, the lacrosse community to connect, and the community as a whole to connect with the veterans in a lacrosse and in a sporting venue for 24 hours and a way for them to have some contact. We try to have a veteran go and talk to teams before they go out. So if they don't have a personal connection, they make a connection.
Sounds like an incredibly emotional, patriotic day. Are there other elements besides the lacrosse? Maybe special T-shirts that are made, raffles, refreshments, anything that adds to the fundraising?
Yes, because we don't call this a lacrosse showcase or tournament. It's called a lacrosse festival. There are T-shirts that every player, veteran, and volunteer will get that will say the name of the location of the event. Well, so it would be Shootout for Soldiers Washington, and our sponsors are on the back of that. And then Under Armour is our official apparel sponsor. So they make specific apparel with the Shootout for Soldiers logo that we sell at the event, and that money goes back to our veterans' charities as well. There'll be raffles. Each event is the local organizer of each event gets a chance to really put on the type of festival that works in their area. So we'll have event organizers that have dunk tanks, live music, raffles, fastest shots, hot dog eating contest, donut eating contest, face painting. It really is up to that organizer, but we try to really create this festival atmosphere with it benefiting our veterans' charities. The other thing that happens during the event is all our veterans' charities set up tents and will be there for the entire 24 hours, personally connecting with the lacrosse community, with the players, with the spectators that come to the event, so that those people get a chance to see where the money goes and what the money does for each of these charities. So having that personal connection with our charities that we support,
makes a huge difference, especially going forward, so that in the next, in a year or two, if a person or a player or an attendee understands more about the charities and might give more or volunteer their time more to some of these charities that we support. So we really try to make this a fun, festive, family-type event that anybody can go out and enjoy, whether you're there for the food trucks, whether you're there to listen to the music, whether you're there to play lacrosse or watch, whether you're just there to meet a veteran or hear more about a local charity or a national charity. Anybody would enjoy coming out to the event.
Our special guest, Mary Trauper, the executive director of Shootout for Soldiers down in D.C. Mary was kind enough to share us a video that we would like to present to you, kind of talking about this event and all the fun that's involved. Appreciate you sharing that video with us. I know the event starts June 23rd at Longbridge Park. Could you talk a little bit about more of the specifics and maybe for people that are not as familiar with the D.C. area, how do they get there?
Well, I can tell you that if they go to the shootoutforsoldiers.com website, that there'll be a map, mm-hmm. which will be able to guide them to get to the park. The event itself starts at 9 a.m., and we'll have an opening ceremony, and then our first game at the event, and in all events, is our veterans game. So we have veterans that come in and play from all over. They get a chance to, a lot of them, they haven't picked up sticks in years, but they play for that first hour, and that is such an emotional and wonderful thing to see and watch, because the camaraderie that these guys feel when they get back on that field together is just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we also do is we do the national anthem 24 times. We do it each time before we start a game. So that can get a little emotional when you get to about that 22nd hour and you realize, wow, we've done this for 22 hours. We're going into our 23rd hour. The event in itself, like I said, food trucks, bands, different games, and a lot of fun that anyone can come out and enjoy, even if it's just coming out and grabbing a sandwich for a quick lunch or something to eat for dinner. We'd love to have you come out. It does not cost anything to attend the event. It's you walk in, you watch, and you learn, and you see, and you experience this overwhelming, amazing feeling about giving back to our veterans.
Mary, I can't commend you enough, this organization enough, for doing something like this. I mean, this, as you know, we live in very divisive times, but everybody should get behind our great, great heroes in the military, and I can't commend you enough for doing this. Are there plans to continually expand? Now, you're up to how many events, did you say, and are there plans to continue to grow with this organization?
We have 13 events scheduled for this year, which is, when you look at our schedule, you'll be like, oh my gosh, you're gone almost every single, at least one weekend, every other weekend. And what's interesting about that is that the application process, which will happen in September, is open to anyone in any location. They apply, they talk about the community support, they talk about what their organizational skills, how much time they can give to the event. And then we talk to each one of these applicants, and we talk to them about what it takes to put on an event and how we support them to make their event successful. And it's amazingly overwhelming when you see how many applications come in each year. So we know that this is going to continue to grow year to year, and we're going to make sure that every event is just as successful as the one in Baltimore. And that's why we're so excited about Washington, D.C. It's the right time for it to happen.
All right, Mary, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck on this great event, and we wish you some great weather, too. I'm sure that'll help out a little bit, too.
Yes, we definitely want great weather. No rain, no storms would be fantastic.
All right.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Yeah, Mary, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck with this year's event.
Thanks.
All right. Mary Trapper, the executive director of Shootout for Soldiers, our special guest this segment. That'll do it for tonight's program. For Keith, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.